not just relieved myself, I fear that I might easily have soiled my best linen.
I thought the Chinese were the Celestials, not the Japanese.
Why, indeed, I believe you're right. I apologize.
And stop with that demon shit. I might not be so accurate next time.
Why, my dear Dr. Wyeth, I shall never understand your political correctness, is it?
As they walked slowly through the bright morning, along deserted streets of houses, which became more ravaged the nearer they came to the lip of the gigantic crater, the main topic of conversation was the encounter with a pair of samurai warriors.
Think that last one escaped, Dad?
Could be, but I thought I heard a yell when Doc shot after him.
I thought I heard it too.
Where the Dark Knight did they come from? I figure we've been just about all over Deathlands, and I never saw or heard a word of them.
Until in the last few weeks.
Ryan kicked the gnawed body of a rat out of his path. Doc had been quiet, walking along. Now he stopped and faced Ryan.
That wasn't some young fool pretending to be a samurai, Ryan. I was as close to him as I am to you, and I would swear on the grave of my beloved Emily that he was the real article. Her grave. I have never thought where she might lie. When I was first a prisoner, I tried to discover something of her later life, but they watched me. Now, all the records have gone. Did she marry again, I wonder? A part of me hopes she stayed a widow, true to my memory. But my disappearance, she would never know why I was taken or where I went. I would not truly have wanted my Emily to pull in single harness for all that remained of her life.
He drew out his swallow's-eye kerchief.
I wandered, dear friends. I'm so sorry. I was saying I believed the samurai was genuine. But there haven't been men like that for 200 years or more, Doc.
True, John Barrymore, true.
First came the totality concept, a secret range of subdivided projects designed to ensure the safety and power of the United States against all aggressors. A part of that was over Project Whisper, which included the section known as Cerberus. Matter transfer was their main aim, but there was also Operation Kronos, the white coat murderers who time-trawled me here from my happy home.
We know, Doc. What are you trying to say?
They spoke English. Mine did. You said that yours did as well, Ryan?
Yeah.
Doc pressed the tips of his fingers against his forehead.
How did they learn it? And did they jump from some unknown other place? Too many questions to ponder. Not enough answers. Almost no answers. And I don't think we even know what most of the questions are.
Maybe we'll never see any of them again.
Maybe, boy. Maybe.
What had seemed like one huge shanty town from the outer limits of the Washington Hole was revealed as several separate gatherings of tents and makeshift huts, separated by filthy, polluted streams and swampy offshoots of what was once the Potomac. The seven companions picked their way down through the shattered remnants of the suburbs. The frame houses with their broken windows were replaced by similar streets of homes, but with roofs gone and ancient scorch marks on their white walls. The nearer they went to what had been the center of the city's nuke cost, the worse the damage grew. More houses lacked their roofs, many of them showing signs of old fires. There was a small area of absolute devastation, with the melted stumps of a dozen gas pumps standing amid the ruins, like the petrified corpses of nuclear soldiers. A row of stores was reduced to blackened concrete boxes. As they made their way down a shallow hill, they went past the last of the recognizable buildings, entering a bleak region of utter obliteration. Roads had been turned into blackened strips of fused lava at the heart of a part of the old city where there was no trace of green. Even now, close to a century after the ending of the long winters, almost nothing grew there except the rankest of deformed weeds. There were sickly lilies the color of drowned flesh, towering 8 or 10 feet above the fused soil. Bright red gardenias were mutated with poisonous spikes. They encountered the first signs of shantytown life, a broken stump of a telegraph pole with the body of a man wired to it. The head-down corpse had lost hands and feet, and a small fire still smoldered beneath it. The shanty towns that ringed the bleak heart of the gigantic crater all had different names, their origins mostly lost in the mists of the long winters. Sweet William was the largest of them, Broken Heart another to the north. A surprisingly neat sign announced to Ryan and the others that they were about to enter the township of Green Hill.
I wonder if that's the Green Hill far away in the old hymn, without the city wall.
There certainly does not seem to be either any hills or anything colored green around, though I can smell all manner of food cooking, both fish and flesh, perhaps even some fowl. Enough to get the underworked taste buds quivering a little.
Stunted black chaparral dotted the dusty track that wound into the main street of the pest hole, with large red ants swarming around their roots.
Big. Looks like 100 shacks and tents. Big for a city pest hole.
We gonna stay here at all, Dad?
Maybe a night.
Rona always said we did well to keep away from pest holes.
Your mother was right, Dean. They're not places for children. Not places for anyone, come to that. But if we can get some food and beds for the night, we could move on tomorrow.
Stick together. Best rule in places like this.
Yeah. Everyone hear that? Jack's right. No wandering off on your own. Anyone.
It was early afternoon as they trudged into the smoky shantytown. In his life, Ryan Cotter had to have passed through hundreds of these stinking little frontier pest holes, with their filthy hovels, poxed gaudies, and brutally dangerous drinking bars. Green Hill didn't look any different from any of the others. The street was trampled mud, with a couple of stores, brothels, and saloons scattered along it. The rest of the place was tents and huts lining narrow alleys that did double service as thoroughfares and open sewers. Few of them had anything that remotely approached a lawn. Most had open, muddy yards, filled with all manner of filthy and noisome rubbish. Some had cords of wood, ready for the biting winters. Ryan saw a wheelless tractor rusting away, with two or three more unrecognizable pieces of broken agricultural machinery beside it. Smoke drifted low over the ville, carried on a fresh easterly wind off the ocean. There were very few people around. Most of them looked ragged, shambling along with their heads shrouded in old blankets or shawls. At a distance, it wasn't possible to tell their sex. A few mongrels came out of one of the alleys, barking around the heels of the seven strangers.
Take thy face hence! To hell with these hounds of war!
JB pointed toward the building.
Try there. Sign says it's called the Lincoln Inn, and, let me see, says that it offers clean beds by the night and good food.
One place will be like the next. Let's go see what they have to offer.
Two stories tall, the Lincoln Inn was the most imposing building in the wretched ville. It was built from weathered wood, the first floor being taken up with a sprawling saloon. A staircase led to the shadowy second floor. An ill-matched assortment of tables and chairs stood around the splintered floor, occupied by half a dozen silent men, four of them playing a desultory hand of poker with a pack of greasy cards. The man behind the bar was short and craggy, the top of his head shaven, with curling gray side whiskers. His eyes were a bright, piercing blue, his cheekbones so prominent that it looked as if he'd swallowed a pelvis.
Howdy there, outlanders. Billy up here, name your poison. Yes, sirree.
The man's seen way too many Roy Rogers movies, like he's in the middle of a B-movie.
We got a range of gut rot to put hair on your chest. Oops, sorry, ladies, nothing meant by that. Our own ladies are taking their afternoon siesta, but if any of you have a taste for some female company, I can easily rouse them. We got a fine Mex girl, near virgin, weighs in close to 300 pounds, gives any gentleman two downs for every up.
How about rooms for a night? Just that and food.
Wait a minute. I know you, don't I, mister? That one eye sort of sticks in a man's mind. And you.
The man pointed a bony finger at J.B.
Both of you rode with Traitor, didn't you?
There wasn't any point in arguing with such a positive identification. The only question was how this man had been treated by Traitor.
Can't say I recognize you.
Oh, name's Clinkerscales. Peter Clinkerscales. Hell of a mouthful, ain't it? I was barkeeping a gaudy close to Butte in the darks. Was having trouble with some trap